Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to episode 128 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. I know we're getting up there. We are a Paul McCartney talk show, mainly dealing with the solo career of the one and only Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Andy Nichols. Andy, the new co-host of a brand new show, right? Tell us about that. What's that called, Andy?
Yeah, that's called Anything But the Beatles, and that's a monthly show that I co-host with fellow podcaster Ethan Alexanian, where we pick one record that is not affiliated with any Beatle connection, and we just sit and kind of geek out about it. And we did the Who Sell Out last month
Oh.
to tie in with the 50th Super Anniversary Deluxe Box Set, which I'm still going through, and that's
Wow.
just an amazing box set that is just got so much in it. And next month we're going to tackle an album by Electric Light Orchestra, but not one of the more famous ones.
Which one?
I can't give it away,
Don't give it away yet.
but it's not a super popular one, I'll tell you that. And it's after Out of the Blue. I'll give you that much. So it's a later one.
Okay. No, interesting. Cool. Yeah,
But
I
yeah.
mean, I listened to the show, thought it was great. I loved, the fact that you guys were very well connected with that album. It just seemed like you guys really love that album.
You nailed the Desert Island disc for me, Andy.
The Who Sell Out
Yep.
just for the jingles, right, Tony?
Just
Just
for the jingles.
yeah. So that was good fun working on that with him. So thanks, partner, for that. And yeah, just back on two legs. And although we are Paul McCartney, this episode is not really so much about Paul McCartney now, is it?
Not really. So as you can see, we have a special guest, a returning guest. Very happy to have Tony Tregarthen from the Fab Four Free For All podcast coming back to talk about an album that I was really glad and super stoked to hear that he liked this. I remember he was
Oh,
listening
yeah.
to an episode of Fab Four Free For All, and you mentioned how much you love this album. So automatically I thought, well, we got to get this guy on the show so I can talk to him, because Andy here, he knows the album, but he's just not, he'll talk about it here once we get to that. But Tony, welcome back to the show. How you doing, my friend?
Very well, man. It's great to be with you guys again. It was a lot of fun last time, and it's gonna be a
Been
lot
a
of fun tonight.
while. It's been about a
It
year.
has, yeah. It was a kick.
Cool. So, but first, before we get started, there's a little bit of news. The McCartney machine. Not that this is really, McCartney. I don't know if McCartney is getting any money for this or not. And who cares if he is? But we got the McCartney stamps now from the
Oh, God.
UK. It's just, I don't know if you
And
guys think
you
the
bought
Beatles
them,
anymore.
and you bought
Well,
them.
yeah, I did. I did. I've got no shame. I mean, it's just, it's. I did spend some money on some of these stamps. I might go back and get a couple more. We'll see. But I was kind of impressed. I mean, some of the images are fine. I kind of like a little bit better than the John Lennon ones that came out a couple of years ago. I thought, and you've got a great variety. I mean, especially as we know with Egypt Station and McCartney 3, we're getting plenty of our variety here in the McCartney world. Tony, did you get a chance to take a look at these stamps?
I think they look great, man. I really do. And as you said, I mean the Lennon ones were nice, but I think these are, I think they look great. I don't know if I'm gonna do it. I don't know if I'm gonna, make the investment, but I
Right.
think I might, Just fun to have. Kind of
Yeah,
cool.
I mean, there's some couple cool ones out there. I mean, I grabbed a couple that had the album covers on it,
Those are the ones,
which
yeah.
those are the ones that appealed to me right away. I look forward to receiving them and maybe putting them in a frame or something like that. We'll see how it goes. But other news. More Beatles than this. Tony, are you familiar with the A's for Apple series from
No.
the okay, it's by a group called Apcor. They're overseas, but they put out this A's for Apple series. It's fantastic, and these books are massive. It's all about Apple,
Wow.
the Apple brand, everybody that is signed. So another person that's involved with Apple, he kind of put out a book under the Apcor title as well, and it's the Beatles in Hamburg book. So dealing with all of the the Hamburg years, you know, memos, contracts, you know, places they played, you know, pictures, stuff like that from people's collections from over the years, you know. So, I mean, this is another, just a great, another book from the AppCore guys.
You know, and as a giveaway, do you get a replica of the condom that they set on fire? Yeah. And sorry. Or maybe they throw that in.
It's just like one of those pop-ups, you know, one of those pop-up books.
Pop-up. Anyway.
I did talk to one of the guys about that, because we're going to try to get the author on here in a future episode, after we get a good look at this, because Andy, you ordered a copyright too.
I did order it. Yeah. It's coming. Yep. It wasn't cheap, because it's imprinted in Germany, and it's
right.
Looks like a beautiful pressing, a beautiful book though.
Oh, yeah. It is. I mean, these guys do a fantastic job. The amount of research that they put in their book, it's Lewiston style research.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, Thorsten here, I think he helped with Lewiston with the first book.
Cool.
So, AppCore Publishing, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So good stuff by AppCore. I mean, but you're definitely getting your money's worth. I think. I mean, this book is like 4 or 5 pounds.
So, yeah, no, it's a good book. So that's a worthy addition there.
Right. So, but let's get into the topic today. We're going to talk about McGear. Our thoughts on McGear. You know, when we first discovered the album and. You know, Tony, you've, like I said, I heard you say how much you, liked this album before, but why don't you start off and just tell us when you first discovered the album, McGear.
Wow. I mean, I probably found the record. I grew up in Nassau County on Long Island. We had a used record store over there called Scrooge Discount Records, which I could take from my home in Port Washington. I could take two buses and get to Scrooge Records. And, you know, it's like anything else. You always have these, you know, back then, anyway, we had mentors at the record stores.
Right.
You know, you had the guy that did the don't buy that, buy this, you know. Right. And I probably got the record when I was 11 or 12. So that was probably 76 or 77.
And you're already well-established Beatles fan, solo Beatles fan at this point in time, right? Yeah.
Yeah. By that time I was already, you know, addicted, and I was already starting with the boots and all that stuff too. So,
right.
But yeah, it was the record store guy that said, did you know about this? And it was what, you know, and there was a used copy of McGear. It was the American version. So it was the single sleeve, not the gatefold. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't find out about the UK pressing till much, much later.
Gotcha.
But took it home. And the funny part of it is that, I had a neighbor who had turned me on to a lot of what then was new wave. So I was a real early adapter of Talking Heads and Ramones and all that, but he also knew Roxy music.
Yeah.
So I had been mildly familiar with the opening cut
from Seabreeze.
So, you know, that just went. So already there was familiarity right from the get go. And then you heard, you know, Our Kid throughout the record too. And I said, oh, wow. So it blew me away. Really did.
Cool. I'll tell you, be honest with you. I mean, this was one that just, went over my head for many years myself. It wasn't until, you know, it's funny, I think it was probably maybe 2010. I was thinking when I saw somebody posted on a Facebook page or something like that, you know, and it was like this. And then somebody was posting like the McCartney interview from 1980, you know, just thing, you know, the kind of the rare things that you don't see, you know, every day. And so I was like, oh, cool. You know, and this is right when I was really starting to, you know, get more into collecting and stuff like that. So, you know, picked it up. But I got to tell you, for me, I didn't really like this album the first time I heard it.
Sure.
You know, and it took a couple listens, but you know, I'm glad I kept with it. You know what I mean? Because McCartney, as we'll learn, is all over the album. He produced it. I mean, he co-wrote 9 of the 10 tracks, you know? So, so for me, this is like a lost gem, you know, that people, you know, if you don't know, should definitely at least listen to once, you know?
Yeah. Totally agree.
Yeah. So Andy, you haven't had it for long, but did you know about
the album? I've known about it for decades. Sure. I mean, as a seasoned, you know, Beatles reader of all kinds of, you know about its existence. Being a kid in the 90s, you know, buying CDs, this was not one I knew about it from reading, but you wouldn't go into Sam Goody or The Wiz and see McGear.
No,
it didn't happen. So I knew that it existed. I've known that it's existed for decades, but it never saw an opportunity to buy it on CD. Would never really see it in a kind of cutout bin or used vinyl record stores ever, really. Right. And I never really had any kind of, I mean, I'm sure there was other ways to listen to it online, but I just, you know, with Paul, there was just so much stuff to listen to. It was kind of like almost an afterthought for me to even just try to bother to go even look to listen to it online. So it was like, okay, if I can't buy it anywhere, you know, and of course, you know, it's been re-released and you guys will get to that, but was always aware of it, but never really had any way to kind of listen to it. So, and I've only just bought my first copy about a month ago for a promotional copy that I got for $12 at a record show here in New Jersey. So I'm still very new to it. So what I've liked, I've heard. I've liked some stuff more than others, but I could kind of see where Tom was saying, where he really wasn't into it at the beginning. I'm kind of there, but I think obviously there's so much jam packed into this record that it's worthy of a revisit for this topic. So I'm glad that for that reason we did it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Tom.
No, go ahead.
It was just funny you say that too, Andy, because you know, when you think about it, when the record came out, figure if I found it in 77, you know, how much solo McCartney did I really have to deal with before the finding it now? Forget it. You're just buried in enough McCartney B-sides between, you know, now 1977 that it's like you say, this is like, where does this fit into the equation?
Yeah, where are you going to find it? Who's going to have it? And the day that I found it, it's like one of those happy, you know, those happy mistakes. You're not looking for it, but I saw it. I'm like, shit, this is the album Tom keeps telling me to get. I better buy it. and I did, because I knew we were going to do this show eventually. So I said, okay. I said, there it is, $12. I said, that was divine intervention for me. So I'm cool. I'm happy that I bought it. And even though I'm not nearly as advanced listener as you guys are, I'm happy that I have the record. And it's a real hidden gem in McCartney's entire canon of what he did to it, you know?
Yeah.
And his involvement in it, of course.
And exactly. And I think, you know, him producing it, you know, I think was excellent too, because I mean, I think, you know, he's, I think at this point in time, you know, 73, you know, 74, you know, I think his confidence is starting to really, you know, get back to where it once was, like in the late 60s when during the Beatle years. And I think it really shows, because I mean, there's a lot of great, I think, of, you know, the instrumentation on this album is strong, his playing, you know, but let's get into there's a little history to the album, you know, because it starts off with the recording of Leave It, which I believe was in 73.
It's like Leave It. It's like the one big single from this album that got pushed.
Leave It is the single, which you know, went to 36 in the UK. So I guess you can say it's a semi-hit.
Top 40.
Top 40. I mean, he's had bigger hit, you know, McGear did have bigger hits though.
With Scaffold, absolutely.
Yeah, with Scaffold. You know, so definitely. Know the name McGear, you know.
Well, you know, and he and Paul had worked together a couple of times too, because Paul had produced a few of the tracks on the McGoffin McGear.
Right.
Record.
Okay.
Right. And then also too, you know, Paul was really involved with the Woman album, with Mike's first solo record, which is a beautiful record. I mean, there's a lot of really kind of cool stuff on that, but he pretty much produced Borders Butterscotch, which is one of the, like, the poppiest track really on the first, you know, the first album. So you could sort of see from that collaborations between the two of them were really going to be interesting. You know, on McGoffin McGear, he had everybody and his mother on the record. You know, when you've got a record, you've got, you know, Jimi Hendrix and Mitch Mitchell and these guys playing on it.
You know,
it's going to be a good record, you know.
Absolutely.
And Paul produced the, you know, Paul really oversaw the recording of a couple of the tracks on that record too.
Mm-hmm.
So the two of them had collaborated for a while, but going ahead, yeah, Leave It was on this record is the start of it. Yeah.
Do you think that that waiting till as long as they did, I mean, it seems like his brother Mike has always shied away from wanting any attention of Paul, and he's been very, you know, I mean, he used another name. I mean, and here he is now collaborating with him. Just, you know, what do you guys think about that in terms of, you know, really kind of having his brother really kind of help him with an album, you know, kind of in the background? I mean, because it's something he obviously, you know, grappled with throughout the height of the Beatles. And now, you know, in this mid-70s, he works with an album. It's just, it's a very interesting dynamic, the relationship these two brothers have.
I think so. But the weird thing about it too is, you know, you have to figure with he and Paul, you also had the crossover that, you know, the Scaffolds were a comedy group on Parlophone.
Mm-hmm.
So who was going to handle them?
Right.
With or without, you know, whether Paul was involved or not, a comedy group on Parlophone was going to go to George Martin.
George Martin, sure.
You know, invariably. So here you had, like, George producing all the Scaffold records, you know, and the funny thing about Mike is I think that he was a reluctant music star. You know, when the Scaffold started, their focus was really comedy and poetry and prose.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but as he put it, you know, Mike was saying, you won't have high visibility doing just that. You've got to have a hit record.
Right.
So when they had the first hit with Thank You Very Much, then all of a sudden he was thrust into the music world, you know, but he never thinks of himself really as much of a composer or, you know, and yet he co-wrote all of the tracks with Roger McGough on his first album. And McGough was definitely not much of a composer. So everything on that first record musically is Mike with a little Paul thrown in. Like he says, right. Paul showed up and, you know, sprinkled some fairy dust on the stuff on that first record. and then you go to this. So it was a weird combination with those two. It's always.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I had always seen, you know, pictures from books and stuff like that with Mike, you know, every once in a while you'll see him in a picture, you know, with the Beatles and during the Beatle years, you know what I mean? You know, so you knew he was always around. You knew he had to have been, you know, studying or watching, you know, all that stuff, learning that craft too. So, you know, come to think when you do this, when he's doing this album, you got to think, well, you know, if I want to do this album, I mean, that who else better to have produce it than my brother?
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, Paul, and especially at that time, because if you think about it, you know, that was kind of a restructuring period for Paul too. Mm. You know, Michael wanted to get out of the Scaffold or get out of Grimms, really. He wanted to get out of Grimms, which was the group that he was with after the Scaffold, the larger kind of like Scaffold Plus. So he was gathering his wits and getting himself together. Paul was, you know, think about everything that happened. Like you just put it in perspective for me before we went on the air, folks. You just put it in perspective for me, Tom, in terms of like when Leave It was recorded and then when the album really went full bloom.
Right. You know,
look at what went on in between. Well, Band on the Run and Nigeria and this.
Die. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Paul was having some growing pains too and just bringing in McCulloch and what are we doing for a drummer after the, you know. So.
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. I mean, especially when you look at the timeline. So April 73, you know, they get together, they're doing, you know, Denny Sywell still with the band. So they do the song, Leave It, you know, and okay, so now what are they going to do with it? I mean, you know, you see stories about now, okay, they do the song, they send it to the Eastmans. Okay, the Eastmans are not going to prep it up for whatever. And then they're like, okay, no, let's do a whole album. You know, I mean, obviously now we got to wait because he's also now got plans to do, you know, what Band on the Run. He's got to record that first, you know, then we lose members. So now we got to replace band members, you know, so that's, you know, that takes time as well. But, you know, you know, our friend Hudson, when he was interviewing Denny Seiwell and Fernando Perdomo for the Ramon tribute, see, I typed in and I asked him. I said, ask him if he remembers anything about Leave It.
And
unfortunately, he didn't remember anything about it.
Wow. He probably thought it was a Wings track. Wait a minute, did we?
Didn't that was a Wings track? We didn't do anything with it, actually.
Yeah. Well, which is odd because between him and Juber, those two are usually the ones with the better memory.
Yes.
You know, from when they were, you know, in the band.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it's just like, okay. But then you also get the you start reading more information. Okay. So now they got this the song Leave It. You know. Now what they're going to do? Now he needs to get a record deal, right? So, you know, they're going to take it to what? Warner Brothers will sign Bad Company. Now they're going to, you know, maybe Bad try Finger. To sign, you know, McGear. Yeah. Badfinger. Thank you.
Okay.
You know, so they're, I'm sure in Warner Brothers' minds, they're thinking, okay, well, if we sign McGear, you know, McCartney's contract's coming, is going to expire soon. So
we go. One of the users is a way to lure them in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell them the family. Why not?
Yeah. But
and plus, didn't they sign George Harrison as well? You know, and that's where they distributed his
Dark Horse record. through Warner. Yeah.
And then speaking of George Harrison, he also recommends them to record the album at Strawberry Studios. Which they do in January and February of 74.
Southport, baby. Southport.
Yeah.
North of Liverpool.
Right. So then now we get to that year, 74, when the recording starts, we get the somewhat maybe the second appearance, because when we're talking to Paul Saley, we're talking about the Little Wing book that's coming out later this year. And the fact we were talking about was Jimmy's first appearance with Wings, which is the first official appearance, but not the first time they worked together, because they worked on the Susie and the Red Stripe sessions,
right.
Later in 73. So I think that would have been November, December 73.
Yeah. Well, I forgot that falls in the middle of that too. Wow.
Yeah.
Wild period.
Yeah,
what's going on? Good Lord.
And then we're talking now, you know, okay, so Jimmy is still not like an official member of Wings yet while recording this album.
I think the cool thing about when you look at the personnel on the record is that it really holds up so strongly as the idea of being a Wings record, as opposed to the fact that something like, you know, I mean, Woman had a bunch of different guest players, no Paul's band involvement on that. And everything else they did, McGoffin, McGear was like cast of thousands, you know. Right. This record, it's really kind of insular. It's really just the band.
Right.
You know, an old friend, they bring Brian Jones in from The Undertakers, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, Jackie Lomax's old band. So talk about keeping it kind of, you know, again, still in the family. But then you get the couple of guest appearances, you know, Patty Maloney from the Chieftains.
Right. Who Paul would later use on Rain Clouds, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, and my God, that's Patty Maloney, you know.
Right.
And you know, and Derek Taylor, you know, as a voice, you know.
Right.
Jerry Conway, the drummer, had also played on Woman. So he was a McGear guy too.
See, okay, that was, I was curious too about that, because I was looking up for information about him, because he did a lot of work with Cat Stevens, mm-hmm. Did a lot of work with Fairport Convention after our friend David Maddox left the band. And then all I saw was he only worked on McGear. So I'm kind of happy to hear that, because I'm going to have to go back and now I have to try to find that woman album.
Yeah.
And get
good
that.
Record. Good record. Really interesting.
You got the 10cc connection on here too.
Oh, right. Of course.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. You know, and using the studio too, that, you know,
right.
Which they were not credited at the time being on the record.
Oh, no.
No.
No. No, and I don't think they're credited on the reissue either.
10cc isn't?
No.
Right. No,
yeah, they're not.
Well, they're credited on.
And it wasn't.
Are they credited on the back of the vinyl, Andy?
They're credited, invented by, well, under the Jism Orchestra thing, invented by Lowell Cream and Kevin Godley, 10cc. Oh, okay,
so that's how they're credited, but not necessarily as performers.
No, no, just for that little okay. thing that they invented.
Interesting. Okay.
Right.
But the 10cc is all, you know, listed on here.
Right. But then I was also doing more research, and it's just like, even though he would end up working a lot with Eric Stewart, he didn't perform on the record.
No.
It was the other three.
Right.
So I thought it was you three.
We thought it was you three.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Like, yeah. Even a shout out to, looks like Angie McCartney. That's the,
stepmother.
Yeah. Interesting.
That is really interesting. Wow. Yeah. Well, Michael was the younger brother, but see, it's funny because, you know, there's 2 years between them, but you know, it's great to know that by the time the Beatles were full swing, before the Beatles had even really, really hit, if I'm not mistaken, the idea of the pre-scaffold, the Liverpool One Fat Lady Electric Circus, whatever it was called, was already going on. So even before Paul was the superstar, Mike was already dabbling in, you know. But I imagine probably still living at home and maybe still living with Angie, with the stepmom.
Right.
It might have been a different set of
circumstances. Could have been a different relationship totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul
was already. What year did that all start happening? What did his father start dating
Angie?
Do you recall?
That's a good question.
The early, probably in the 60s, I would think, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know for sure without looking it up, but probably. It'd be interesting if it was pre-Beatles fame or post-Beatles fame.
Yeah, because, wow, right, because if Paul's mother died when...
50, when he was 14.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting. Let me just see. I'm curious when they got married.
Yes, check look it up, Tom.
Angie McCartney married Jim. She married her first husband in 1956. She was married to Paul's father, Jim, from 1964 until he passed in 1976.
76. So they married in 64, which by long time, Paul was already gone for a long time by then, obviously. So,
yeah.
And to your point, Tony, maybe Mike was still in the picture a little bit there on the home front.
So. That's what I would imagine. Because Mike's, you know, their popularity, the Scaffold's popularity was pretty much local.
Right.
You know, for the most part. I mean, local meaning centered in the UK.
Yeah, regional. Regional. In the UK, sure.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't see... much, you don't see Paul talk much at all about his stepmother at all.
No,
it's like zero, nothing.
That's interesting. No. What was that?
Nothing.
It's you know, and then I know like the he's had like issues with the daughter, the stepdaughter, or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a very slippery slope. Seeing all these names credited on an album, because it's, I mean, think about it. Other than this, when are you going to see that? Nowhere.
Yeah, but you know, it shows you that whole Liverpudlian family thing. I mean, family means so. You know, if Michael had a good relationship with the stepmother, you know, Paul, I'm sure was, you know, all right.
Whatever, it's your life, not mine.
Exactly right.
And I guess you think about it, two years is a big deal. Especially when you had two more years of your mom than your brother did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. I mean, I'm sure his whole thinking on that was completely different than Mike's. And I get that. I mean, I'm 6 years older than my brother, and I definitely have a totally different feeling about, you know, family things than he does because, you know, I had more of experience with certain people, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm 11. I have 11 years difference between mine and my oldest. So the joke is my parents raised two only children, you know, which is which is the joke. but that's good. But yeah, you know, so who knows? I mean, and you know, like I say, with Paul, he was already out and on the road and gone.
Right.
You know, by 64. Whereas Michael was still kind of, you know, making his way. And, you know, again, like I say, staying local. You know, because everything the scaffold did was UK based.
UK based, sure.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, good point. Let's talk about some of the songs on. Let's talk about the songs on the album. What's, you know, songs that stood out to you? You know, ones that you still might not like here. I mean, I don't know, Tony. I mean, were you a fan of the whole album? Was there certain songs that you still maybe really don't care for?
I think I grew into a couple of tracks. You know, I always think about the idea that, especially when you discover a record that's so young, you know, when you're so young, it, there are certain things that are going to grab you. Then as you get older, you know, something like The Casket when I was young was not going to jump out at me.
Yeah.
And,
agreed.
And now, you know, you listen to something like that and it's, you know, it's absolutely beautiful. It's a gorgeous track, you know, for me. But when I was younger, not so much, you know, right. But you just don't get it. You know,
no, you don't.
No relativity yet.
Right. You know. I mean, and there's some things you don't get to when you're younger. I mean, especially if you listen to this album in the US and, you know, and it's in UK stuff going on, like Norton, I think is, you would think
that's a very British centric song. Right. That one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's definitely like a song that I don't really necessarily gravitate towards because I just, you know, just doesn't, you know, appeal to me in any way.
Norton was one that I think grabbed me too when I was young because it was so
quirky.
It was quirky. And also too, you know, back then it was still, you know, I knew the fact that like Brian couldn't let it, you know, Brian Epstein couldn't let the world know he was gay, you know, Elton still had not come out yet.
Right.
You know, so Norton, you know, it was kind of just like, well, wait, you know, especially that closing line, you know, I love you, Norton, you know, right on, you know, with the big, you know, and it's like, is the narrator secretly in love with Norton? Is Norton, right. Norton's a dandy? Is he in the closet? Like, so all through the song, especially that time when you kind of, you know, we knew that, you know, we knew gay people existed, but it wasn't a, you know, the whole song, you're kind of just going, what's going on here? Like, who is this guy? What's the deal? You know, and it did remind me of that little bit in Magical Mystery Tour,
right?
You know, with the sergeant, you know, yelling and
yes, yeah.
And this throwback there. So it was kind of like, oh, hey, I get that, you know. But anyway, but yeah, so that did get me though, that one.
Yeah. Sea Breezes. I mean, you said you're, I mean, this was, you know, written by, Brian Ferry, and you said you were already a fan of Roxy Music at that point in time. You know, how does that cover, you know, match to the original?
I think it builds on the original. I think, the original is a little more sparse. It probably sounds a little bit closer to the unadorned version that's on the bonus disc. With Roxy, but I think that it's a lovely cover. I mean, Paul brought this one to the project.
Okay.
And I'm curious if Michael had any real connection, quote unquote, to the song, or if Paul just said, you know, hey, little brother, hey, you know, maybe do this one. Hey, you know, but it's great for his voice. It's really great for Michael's voice.
Right.
You know, Mike's got a very Brian Ferry type voice, I think.
Yeah, you know, cool. Speaking of voice, I was going to ask you then. I mean, what did you think of his singing, you know, on this and then the prior album?
He's not a guy with a huge range.
No. Yeah.
Not at all. Right. He's got to use what he has, and he has to use it. He has to use it almost as an actor rather than as a singer. It's kind of always the way I look at this record. There are moments where he can approach a song differently, right. but now he's got to go into it like an actor, I think, more than as a vocalist per se.
Gotcha.
You know.
Gotcha. The hit song "Leave It." You know, you said you're a big bootleg. Do we know if there was a bootleg of Paul doing the vocals on this or anything like that, or did we just?
Not one that I've ever seen. But you know, it's a song like this. Like I took a bunch of notes for the show, and I was just saying, you know, I mean, I've always loved the opening line, and even when you look online, it says I dearly love her artichokes. Like it still writes it out. It's like, no, I dearly love her arty jokes. You know, come on, guys. You know, but you know, this song's got a great piano sound. Yeah. It's a tremendous ensemble performance.
Right.
The band just kicks this. And the one thing that I like about this too is this, Paul could have sold this to Roxy Music easily. This could have been a killer Roxy Music track. And Paul's bass playing on this, just like throughout this record.
Well, yeah.
This is one of those songs that I wish he would have kept for himself.
Totally. Totally. I mean, that bass fill, that little run, that's unlike anything he's ever done on any record.
Right.
That bass fill. And then, you know, you have the extended mix, and I love the fact that they told the sax player Tony Coe was having marriage problems.
Bad day. Yeah.
He was having a bad day. And they said, just take your anger out in the solo. Love that. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get that It's So Hard sax too, you know, from this a little bit, because I think, what was his name? The name's leaving me right now. The sax player for It's So Hard.
Was that King Curtis?
King Curtis.
Because I think they're saying that he had a bad day when he recorded that as well. So kind of a little similar story, but I love the two. I mean, I love that. I love the horns on both songs, actually. So
yeah.
But that's definitely a highlight for me on the track, for sure.
I tell you what, in my limited knowledge of the LP, the one that I actually come back to the most since owning it is that What Do We Really Know? That song, that's to me, that's the one I'm like, okay, repeat.
The McCartney. And that's like the first time you like really hear, you know, Jimmy.
Yes, shine. Jimmy, yes. And you hear Paul screaming, which is like, right. Okay, this is good.
And am I correct? Is this Paul McCartney's only bass solo ever?
Could be. I mean, where else would you hear a bass solo from?
Right. Can't think of where would he ever else do that? But that's an addicting song. That's a great song.
And it's got a great coda at the end too. And Jimmy is just really wailing at the end there. I'm just, yeah. Good. I mean, good choice. I'm glad you like that one, because I mean, that's definitely one of the better upbeat,
that song. I mean, from the second I played the album, and it's the second, I'm like, this is a good song. I knew it. I knew it right away. I'm like, this is going to be a good song. Listen, I'm still working my way through the rest of the LP, and I'm just nearly not as, you know, well read as you guys are, but that one is, man, that's a great song. And he wrote that. Didn't McCartney write that song?
Yeah. That's a single composition from McCartney on that one.
That's why I like it.
Yeah.
Well, the last track on side one, now that one took some time was a grower for me.
Which one is that, Tom?
This is called Have You Got Problems.
Oh, okay.
And this one has got some great horn action, you know, throughout this one too. And I've come to really appreciate, you know, that on the record. And again, it's another McCartney McGeer co-write, which so was Norton. So I would kind of love to see the process between the two brothers. You know, were they sitting, you know, who brought what to the table? You know, did Mike bring some songs and Paul help and vice versa? You know, were any of these songs like the come and get it situation where, you know, it's like, here's the song, do it this way. And
right.
You know,
don't change it. Right.
Yeah, yeah. You'll have a hit.
I, it's really funny because like I say, we talked to Michael, you know, 11 years after the record, and he really didn't have a lot of just very specific memories of it being done in a way where, you know, well, Paul came in with this song, but it was never, Paul came in with this finished thing. It sort of felt like it really was a marriage of everybody throwing in their, you know, their vibe. And you have to wonder, I mean, you know, McCartney, who, you know, we know, you know, told Henry McCulloch, you know, how to play the solos, you know, or whatnot, which used to piss Henry off. You know, a project like this, I have to wonder if Paul kind of like let the reins go a little bit. And it was kind of like, you know, Denny's got an idea here, you know, and because Mike seemed to make it sound as though it really was just this big, really cool, we're all in the room, let's make this record, you know, as opposed to like you're saying, Tom, I would think a Paul project, it's, you know, hi mates, got a song, all right, let's work on it, you know.
But then you also got to think too, well, okay, this is Paul's younger brother. You would think that he's going to be very protective and make sure that this is a good record. You know what I mean?
True too.
Because his stamp is all over it as well.
Yeah, true too. You know? True too. I mean, in some ways, and I say this lovingly, but it's as sloppy as, you know, especially if you got problems. It's as sloppy as anything on Band on the Run.
Right.
You know, it's as sweet, which McCartney loves. He loves songs with phases.
Yep.
But it sort of is a band getting their rocks off and Paul playing as a band member,
not the driving force.
Right. Or almost as if to say, you know what, since it's not my name on it, and as I agree with you, Tom, he's got to protect baby brother. And he wanted this to be the strong start of a big solo career for Mike.
Right.
But I think at the same time, you know, imagine that idea of just being able to say, hey, look, my name doesn't even say McCartney on it. You know, it says McGear. Right. You know, I could hang back and play bass.
Right. I mean, you also got to think of the two. Okay. Well, baby brother's got to take the training wheels off too, you know?
Yeah.
But like you said, he's already well established at this point in time. You know, he's had hits.
But maybe it was the thing of, you know, maybe it's like, okay, he's making an album, but it's just going to be a one-off thing. Like, was there an intent to say, okay, well, he's really going to try to start a proper recording career as a bona fide solo artist? Or is this just kind of a one-off laugh thing, you know?
You know, I would think that at this point, he probably, you know, it's kind of, you have to figure you're already 12 years into your quote music career. So I think he's sort of back up against the wall a little bit at this point. And they didn't know that Liverpool Lou was going to be a hit for the Scaffold. They didn't know Scaffold was going to get back together and then do Fresh Liver. So as far as Mike was concerned, you know, it's sort of like, well, going to go back to being a hairdresser, or I got to make this one stick. You know, Island had cut him loose. At Woman was on Island. So Island had dropped him.
Right.
So I think, you know, I think in a way, in answer to that, Andy, I think he really probably was trying to make the go of it.
So just start a proper career this way? Yeah.
Yeah.
And what better person to have on your side, you know, than...
And then your older brother. You know,
no, for sure. I mean, it's just, it would have been, I mean, obviously, I mean, Tony, you probably know, I mean, were there other future attempts at recording after this album or sessions or?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. Yeah, and Tom will talk about, I'm sure, a few of the things that are on the second CD.
Right.
Or some of the follow-up singles.
So there was plans to continue.
Plans to continue. Yeah, I mean, some of the tracks I think were recorded as late as 1980.
That
are on this box set. Yeah.
Wow.
So, going over, unless anybody else has anything else to say about the tracks on the first side, we'll flip it over.
Just, I love the Elvis little bits and Have You Got Problems, the bow, bow, but you know, I love that stuff. Anyway.
But you're right. I mean, but Andy, I mean, right off the bat, I mean, for me, you know, Leave It, you know, I've loved it from the first minute I heard the song. But when you hear Jimmy's guitar playing on what do we really know? Fantastic. And then when you go back, I mean, if you realize that, okay, then, you know, like us, Andy, you'll go back and, okay, it's Jimmy who ends up becoming a member of Wings. And you're like, that's so cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what makes a track like that stand out. For sure.
Yeah. So we'll flip it over. And then we got our one and only McCartney Magoo. Is that how you pronounce the name?
I think it's
McGough.
McGough, right. Which is The Casket. Now, this is still like the one song that I'm still you know, that hasn't grown on me really. I like, you know, the musicianship is fine. You know, but I think maybe it's just the lyrics or the way he performs the song that it just still hasn't grabbed me, the casket. But and maybe you know, and this side two is my favorite side of the album. And I really just don't like the way it opens.
It is a weird, weird side opener. Definitely. Right.
So, I would definitely would have loved to see maybe given Grease a Ride open this track or open the side, because it's just, you know, it's a really grab you by the balls kind of, you know, song that really gets you into side two. But,
I mean, to me, you know, it's funny because as a composition, this one's probably grown on me more than, you know, than I ever thought it would. I even wrote in the notes, I was saying, you know, it's co-written by McGoffin, Paul, and Linda. Right. And I wrote in big capital letters in my notes, I wish there were more of these. because, you know, I mean, you know, I love McCartney solo stuff, but you know, right. You know, from my show, I sometimes will goof on Paul's lyricism. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he bought a Gigi and he jumped the fence. I mean, really, you know, I mean, come on now. But I'll goof on Paul as a lyricist, whereas McGough was looked at as, you know, McGough is like Liverpool's poet laureate.
Mm.
You know, McGough is considered like the poet that came from Liverpool, from that era anyway. So for him to write stuff with Paul was, I just always thought it was a really nice track. But, and you know, and like we were saying, Patty Maloney from the frickin' Chieftains.
Yeah.
That's too cool.
No, you would also have to think now, and for McCartney to do a co-write with McGough, I mean, they had to have known each other for years as well, you know, you know, hanging out with the, you know, the scaffold, you know, as well, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure those two knew each other, you know, really, really well. And McGough was involved in all those cool things like International Times, you know, like IT.
IT, and, right.
And he was real good buddies with Barry Miles, you know, so.
Well, that's the whole network of people that he's been around with for years, really.
Yeah, yeah. So everybody, you know, it was still, again, all in the family.
Yeah, very much so.
Next track, Rainbow Lady, one of my favorite. This is like the summer of love song to me. This is could have been a classic. I if this song came out in 67, I think it would have been a hit.
Rainbow myself. Lady, this one's called.
Yeah. I love this track. What do you think, Tony?
I just love the sound of this track too. I mean, it's an odd mix, and every verse is mixed differently. Like each verse has a different. The vocals move to a different spot. And that adds to that Summer of Lovey kind of vibe to it. But tremendous bass playing from McCartney in this too. But yeah, I love this. And there's that little synth flute that's playing in there.
Yes. A lot of that in this album as well.
Yes.
You know, in certain places where you wouldn't expect it.
Yeah.
And this is one of those tracks. Yeah.
Yeah. So love it.
Cool. Cool. Andy, are you still getting familiar with this one?
Yeah. Side two is like a total. I don't know anything on side two. Sorry. I wasn't BSing you when you did the show. I don't know the album that well.
We'll inspire you.
But no, you definitely are. You guys definitely are, because I love all those quirky. And Tom and I have talked about this. Any kind of synth Moog stuff I hear. I like that. So this album, and I've listened to it two or three times, and it's full of all those little things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Record.
Canoodling.
I love that stuff. So
me too.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's going to be there, you know, for sure. Yeah.
And then, you know, it's track three on side two, Simply Love You. I mean, it's another, again, it's another simple classic, you know, McCartney ballad that could have been on any of his albums, I think.
Denny singing lead on this would have been fun. Denny singing lead on this on a Wings record.
Simply Love You. Is this a ballad or no?
It's kind a ballad, of. But it's kind of it's a bouncy ballad.
Okay.
You know, it's not a give me a C, a bouncy C. Yeah, it's a bouncy little love song kind of thing.
Right. He did do this on a Spanish television show. I think he in 74 or 5-ish. It's on YouTube. You can just type in McGear Spanish television and you'll see him do this and leave it, which is, you know, and all he's doing is pretty much is lip syncing to the song. But you know, you got some, you know, cute girls around him and stuff like that.
For him to walk over and be Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, exactly. Said, yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
But yeah, but it's fun. Again, I think it's a fun song. Well, I think it's, you know, definitely one of those, you know, tracks McCartney can write in 5 seconds in his sleep, you know, and you know, he'll wake up and they'll be like, oh, where did I hear this one before?
I simply love scrambled eggs. Right. Scrambled eggs. No, I just but like, you know, I had another thing I wrote in the notes, like I love Denny, Linda, and Paul's backing vocals on this.
Yes.
I think
yes.
always sounds sweet.
That's yes. The Wings.
And,
that's
yeah, and to me, you. That, like you said, that's such an important part of Wings' vibe.
Right.
And my other question, though, and this is, we were talking about the relationship between them earlier. I'm curious as to why, after this, Mike never guested on a Wings record.
Good point. Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Wow.
I mean, they were still so close. They never had a falling out, the two brothers, ever.
No.
And, you know, you would think that I wonder if Paul ever invited him, and maybe he just knew Mike wouldn't.
I think there was more of the latter there, Tony. I think he just knew that, you know, my brother knows he's, you know, he's not going to bother with anything that I do. And
yeah.
Mike was definitely going to just say, you know what, that's Paul doing his thing, and I'm not going to even interfere with anything he does.
Yeah.
But I think if he had asked Paul, I'm sure Paul would have said, sure, come on in.
Come on down. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And
you
it would have been
maybe a backing vocal here or somewhere joining in with the, you know.
Yeah, I just, and, that was more of a mic saying, you know what, I'm not going to interfere with Paul's stuff. And if he asks me, you know, so.
Yeah. I can definitely see and take a Linda McCartney approach where, because he's on an interview talking about how, well, we decided that, you know, if Linda does anything, it's just going to be, you know, like her album it'll be her song and we'll do whatever we do with it and, you know, put it out as a single or a record, you know, or something like that.
Yeah. Long live Susie and the Red Stripes. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a fascinating point too, the fact that you'd never saw, you know, Mike on a McCartney record, you know.
Yeah. No, weird.
It's not like he can't do anything.
right Very bizarre.
Side four, I mean, I'm sorry, it's not side four, but track double album here, folks.
Double album. Yeah.
One of my favorites, this was an instant classic to me. Again, just a smoking song, Giving Grease a Ride. What a track.
This, you know, Ram meets Band on the Run.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I like that. Again, you're getting, you know, Jimmy McCullough just, you know, really, you know, doing some bluesy, you know, guitar licks. I like the, you know, the everything about this song, really, you know, the synth, whatever, it's the synth, I think, that's going on in there, you know, as well. And this is one of the songs that I really do like the way Mike performs it or sings it, if you will. You know, I really think it's cool. You know, obviously the sound crash effect that you hear, you know, in the song too is pretty cool. But yeah, this is definitely a highlight for me on this album.
I've always loved this, and he invented the word Chevrolady. I mean, there can't be a better word than that. That's just, you know, but you know, again, this is also Paul at the helm, production wise. You know, he moves Mike's voice around,
right,
in the stereo spectrum. He plays with it. He gives the guitarist their props. I'm not sure if it's Jimmy times two in each channel or if it's Jimmy and Paul. Because there's two lead guitars going on, and you know, one in each channel. And I never could figure out whether they're both Jimmy or one's Paul and one's Jimmy. Far more guitar play on this record, you know, on this track than in a lot of it. And I wrote, it sounds like a much more mature version of anything they would have tried on Wildlife, with jams that are actually smart, you know. It's a great jam, you know.
No, I think so. Like I said, I mean, again, another track that I would have loved to have seen on a Wings album.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And if you like this, on the first album, there's a song called Uptown Downtown, which is similar.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, I'll definitely check that out for sure. And that's a McCartney McGear track as well. So again, you know, how was that presented? Did Paul bring it in? Did Mike bring it in? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd love to know, you know. You know, last track on the album as, you know, another epic, it ends with a great, I think it's a, you know, a good song, The Man Who Found God on the Moon. Again, you really get the Wings backing vocals on this one, which I think is great. The Denny, Linda, and you get Paul doing some backing vocals on this one. That's really good. I think Mike is really good on this track as well, vocally. You get a little, I guess you get snippets of his two daughters during this track as well, you know, which is kind of cute, you know. But I think this is a great track to close the album.
I think so, too. It's a really nice vocal from Mike. To me, from the McCartney catalog, I'd peg this to like Red Rose Speedway, not just a play on the first Indian on the Moon, for God on the Moon. But I put this to, and Mike and Paul harmonizing together, they just sound, on the second verse, they sound great.
On the second verse, absolutely. I had that in my notes as well. It just was really cool. Yeah.
You know, Denny sets up a little counter melody. There's one point where Mike starts to sing the word trip because he's not the strong vocalist. Paul picks it up and extends the word. And you almost can't tell where Mike's voice ends and Paul's voice starts. You can if you're really tuned to Paul's voice, which we are. Right. But it's just so cool to hear something like that and be like, this is siblings. This is two siblings singing together, which sounds like, to me, like nothing else in the world. So it's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, I agree. But I definitely agree.
I was talking to Tom before the we went on, just like the hidden gems of the artwork on this album, you know, you got, which is wild. Like, what's going on here? Like, who, like, what's going on with this cover? Like, what is this?
Like, it's like a Sullivan's Travels type.
Right. But then hidden, you know, looking at it closely, and again, an album that I'm not really familiar with, you got Paul and Mike and this little airplane thing here, which is cool.
Right.
And then you've got the library building in the upper right hand corner, which I didn't even notice, you know, which is so cool. You know, so there's like these nice little kind of, you know, gems all over the cover of this thing, you know.
And then if you're really looking, especially on the front and the back, you'll see people you'll recognize too.
Like, you know, are those his parents too here in the up, like is that Jim and Mary on here? I don't.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Look in the airplane. Look in the airplane.
That's what you said. Yeah, they're both on there.
Yeah. And then who gets to see right there?
Yeah, see, I didn't even notice that. See, you said it. I didn't even notice that. Now listen, I'm only on the album a few weeks, but like he's right there at the bottom.
Yeah.
That's right. And then on the back, you get right here on the back in the middle.
Is that Jimmy?
That's Jimmy.
Right.
Yeah. And then right above them, you'll see Denny.
Wild. It's like it's all these little nuggets that are on this thing, whether it's the sleeve or in the music or the production.
And again,
it's truly an enigma of
So then naturally, Linda's on the horse.
Yeah.
And then sitting down next to the Linda on the horse,
Denny Sywell. Is there anything on this part of the album cover that my promotional sticker is blocking?
it's the man who found God on the moon. It's an astronaut. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and again, it's back to this idea that, you know, these are all, you know, these guys were all art school kids, you know, for the most part too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm certain that somebody like Mike was pretty directly involved in, you know, at least influencing what was going to go on with the cover. He had the idea of the Gulliver's Travels thing and then the little people around and all that. And why not just add everybody from your childhood and your, you know, and the band, get everybody in there, you know, but it's that track, you know, going back to the song, the only thing I never understood is that closing interjection. where like the very end when the spoken voices. So there you are then, quite a difference. Yes, the answer is LP. Like, what is, you know, that's the one thing that's always maybe. And then like he talks about the chorus is repeating about Annette who makes him happy. And he said like everything on the track was based on something real. So he, again, historically, you know, we, when we finished the interview with him, we realized we didn't hit him up with, so did you ever like, did you know this Annette, you know? But there was a person, it had to have been a real person. He said it was, this whole track was all real incidents, you know, real things that happened. So that's kind of cool. I used to play this on my radio show as a follow-up to Space Oddity.
Oh, good.
Yes. Go right into it.
Go right into it. Yeah.
So anyway. Good,
nice 1-2 punch right there. Absolutely. There's, it's a funny story regarding the B-side to Leave It, Sweet Baby, which, you know, again, it's a McCartney, I think it was a McCartney, McGeer written track, or just McCartney. But it's originally, it was originally titled All My Loving. So you, I guess, you can't have a, you know, another McGeer or McCartney, you know, singing a song called All My Loving, you know. So... you know, so the name was changed to Sweet Baby, but another good track. I mean, I thought it was worthy of being on the album myself.
I think so too. Yeah, and again, typical of that that time period where, you know, all the great B-sides. Everybody in that camp, you know, they were hooked on the idea of, you know, well, it doesn't quite fit on the album, but we're not going to toss it away. Let's put it on a B-side.
Just
as good as anything on the album, you know?
Right.
So, generally how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Great percussion on this song. I always wonder if that's Paul's contribution in a way. Some really cool things going on here.
But, right.
Yeah. You
know, this definitely would have been a great session to be hanging out with or hanging out at, you know, and seeing, you know, obviously like we've been talking about the whole time is, you know, who did what? I mean, how were the songs presented? I mean, you know,
was it
a true collaboration?
Right.
You know, yes. In the sense of like a Lennon McCartney collaboration in a way, you know, everybody's bringing in bits and pieces to the song. You know, how free was Jimmy McCullough to do his solos, you know, and stuff like that, you know? So, I mean, definitely would have been really cool to be at this, at these sessions for sure.
Yeah. And as far as, you know, the album's got a lot of humor in it too. Mm-hmm. And both Paul and Mike are funny people.
Yeah.
You know, they've got great senses of humor.
Comes with that background and where they come from. It's, you know, the Irish family background, the Liverpool thing. That's all over this record. I'm sure. I don't know. Again, I don't know it, but I'm sure. I'm not surprised given your guys' take on it, the humor in it. It's all very much a homespun family type affair because that's what they did. I mean, you go, you know, whether this, it's the James Paul McCartney scene where they're all in the pub singing, you know, it's just straight out of that. You know, that's just what it is.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So the reissue, I mean, so like you were, Andy, you've got the US version in your hand, and obviously, like you said, it's just a single sleeve.
Yeah, no,
you
know, gatefold, yeah.
Right. This is the Cherry Red record reissue from 2019. So obviously it's the same front cover, but then you get to, you know, you get to open
that's
up and
cool
get more,
you get the code, the gatefold, so
the
you
giant,
right? So yeah, that was the Cherry. So Cherry Red did the vinyl reissue and the CD, two CD,
and the CD reissue. Yeah, so obviously you know so you get the information here, what you got on the back cover of the US,
right,
you know, version. But this is, I mean, this sucks that we didn't get to see this. This is really cool. I really like this, you know, photo.
Right down there, from, right, sitting right down there on Merseyside. That's pretty cool.
Feet in the water.
Know? Yeah. Another cool thing I actually didn't realize, too, is that it's very interesting that he chose, given, you know, his departure from Wings and that it wasn't so great at the time, Denny Seiwell actually, his, you know, you see his photo on the cover of the album, you know, right. Very interesting, you know, given his relationship that strained with Paul by that point.
But I think that shows respect to Denny Seiwell as well. You know, I mean, he is a brilliant player. You know?
Oh yeah, that's. But it's cool though. After that, he was like, oh, he's still going to go on the cover. You know, I mean, he could have been like, ah, you know, you left my brother hanging, and I'm not going to, you know, you might have drummed in this track, but I'm not going to put you on the cover. And he was, you know, but that's typical of the McCartney way, isn't it? So
right,
I think so. Yeah.
The cool thing about these Cherry Red Records was okay, now when Cherry Red Records first put these up for sale,
you got a lyric sheet there too.
Yeah, you got a sheet in here, which now I'm missing the main thing I wanted to show you. but yeah, you got the sheet here. It's the same as it's pretty much the same, but then you got the lyrics inside. You know.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Is that the first time lyrics were included in this album, or no? Or did the original have them, Tony?
Well, I didn't have the CD, so I don't know.
You know something? I'm thinking the original had it, but I'm not 100% sure. I can't remember if I remember, you know, pardon the lyrics being very plain to me, but I can't remember it's because I was reading along with the sheet or wow, long time ago that, right. You know, I still have my original copy of the vinyl, but that's the fall down of us being in the CD generation. My vinyl is up in with my stuck in between my wings records, and I haven't pulled it out since the CD came out. Right. You know, so I can't remember if there's a sheet in it, if there's an insert in the US or not.
Yeah. You know? So when you went to go order these from Cherry Red Records, you had an option. You could get an autograph. Okay. So the first 100 people to order the CD had an option to also get the autograph free of charge from the CD and the vinyl. So I'm like, okay, cool. I want to get, why not? And it's free, you know?
Sure.
So by the time I actually got to pick it up, the CD one was already, that option was gone. So like, well, I was going to get the vinyl anyways. Okay. So I'll get the autograph for the vinyl. So you got like a postcard style, nice. You know, piece of paper here. And then on the other side, you get the autograph.
Nice.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah, which that's
is,
very
you
cool.
You know, it's just a nice little incentive to pick it up, I guess.
All right, now the $64,000 question. Do you both file this album in between Band on the Run and Venus and Mars in your collections?
But you do. See, I put it as its own record.
Under McGear, MCG.
Yeah.
Now, Tony, I'm a novice, but when I got it, I slid it right between Band on the Run and Venus and Mars. I
there
did.
You go. The Missing Wings record.
Yeah.
You know, can't put Thrillington under T.
Good question there. Let's do that. I mean, is this a Wings sounding record to you, Tony?
Yeah. I mean, it has. It's always been kind of a... I look at it as the group Wings,
right,
which Paul McCartney is a member of,
correct?
Being led by another guy,
yeah. Right.
Just led by a different dude, you know, Mike singing lead and, you know, but I, you know, it's hard. You got to get out of the Paul McCartney and Wings. You got to count Wings almost as its own entity. And
at that point, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And then just slide Mike in as the lead singer or what have you, you know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some great Wings highlight moments on this album, but, you know, which I can understand why people would consider this a lost Wings record. But I also like to think of it as its own record, too, because I don't think you would ever hear a Norton. I don't think you would never hear a Norton on a Wings record.
Fair point.
You know?
Bingo.
Or even the Casket or something like that. I mean, I don't think you would hear on a, you know, on a Wings record, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it, you know, yeah, I mean, I can see why people say it is a lost Wings record for sure. You know,
but all the Wings records always have an anomaly.
Right.
You know, I mean, Morris Moose and the Grey Goose, you know, First Indian on the Moon, you know, their little, you know,
yep.
So so who knows? You know.
Yeah, I think it firmly. I think it's an. I think it could be the Lost Wings album for sure. I think it easily. You know.
Now, did you get any of the CD reissues from the '90s, Tony? On this,
I did. I bought the Ryko.
Oh, you did get the Ryko? Okay.
Yeah, I had the Ryko, and then And then
there was one from C4 Miles Records too.
The C4 Miles one. Oh, I think I got also.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I ended up misplacing both of them and bought some Russian Grapefruit Records version, which they probably didn't pay any rights for. And, you know, but they did a nice job with it anyway. And then, and then the Cherry Red is the definitive, you know?
Yeah. Obviously. Yeah. So here's the CD set right here, which is, it is really, they did a great great job with this one, it's a fold up, so like I said, you get a nice little booklet in here that, has some stories. I mean, he loves to talk about the Schofield stuff, the beginnings of that. And then you get the remastered album. And then you get disc two, which has all of those, the B-sides and the stuff. Because it's funny, because when this was released in the U.S., none of the tracks from the album were a single, which was kind of weird.
No.
So there were other tracks, and then like I said, you get tracks that he recorded throughout the 70s up until 1980, and then you get the DVD, which has two one-hour interviews, and then a really, I think I love the promotional video for Leave It. It's fun. You get a woman just wearing nothing but a sheet running through the woods while
very bizarre.
Yeah. While Mike is singing the song. But
Thomas, do you know if that box is still in print from Cherry Red, or is it long out of print now?
I hope not. You can definitely look it up. I should have looked it up before.
I think it is. I think it's still around.
I mean, what year did that re-release come out?
2019.
Oh, okay. Recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was thinking like maybe early 2010s or something.
No.
So with only the last 2 or 3 years. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's not numbered. Yeah. So I think it's probably still.
It's not numbered.
Not numbered. Yeah.
Oh,
not
good. Numbered. Okay. Yeah. All right, then I'm gonna pick that up then.
Because the Ryka one was in and out of print.
Ryka disc,
And I still think you can find this on Amazon as well.
Oh, really? You don't have to go through directly Cherry Red? Okay.
No, I don't think you have to go through Cherry Red. So, because I think they were selling it here in the States on Amazon, but I wanted to get that autograph, so I ended up just
buying. Cherry.
I just ended up getting both of them from Cherry Red.
Very wise of you. I missed that.
Did you get the autographed one, Tony, or no?
No, I actually missed that. Saying that was the first. I was so on top of knowing that it was coming out on second disc, that website, but I went right to Amazon to do
it. And you Amazoned it. Okay.
Yeah. I should have gone, Tom did well there. The only thing that was nice was that when we did the interview, I was missing one of the Scaffold records still. Mm. And Mike sent the cassette of the Scaffold record.
Oh, did he?
Over. Yeah. Oh. He was like, oh, you have to have that one. So that he's until you find it, and he sent us a cassette of the Scaffold record, which was very cool.
Amazon has it as an import for $21.99.
Oh, not bad.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. Pull the trigger on that one.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm going to right now.
Buying the disc live during the show.
I'm doing it right. $22.91 including tax. Done.
See, we've psychologically encouraged all of your listeners and viewers to go out and do the same.
Now, the only thing, it wasn't Prime, so I'll have to wait a few weeks for it. But
So, Tony, it's not rare for Andy or I to actually buy something while recording a show.
That's cool.
Tom, where'd you get that? I found it here. Hold on. Or he'll do the same thing. I'm telling you. We did that with Flaming Pie, I think. We've done that with a few things. We're just because we're nuts. That's why.
That's great.
You're of the same ilk.
Just as
you have the same illness.
Yes.
I mean, you're still getting stuff as they're coming. I mean, you're still collecting to a certain extent, right,
Tony? Oh yeah. Yeah. I haven't changed. I'm going back now and I'm going back to like picture sleeves. That's been my thing lately. I'm going back to
Tom.
I spent the last year, rediscovering all of these the pitchers, you know, getting the, you know, Mrs. Vanderbilt from Italy, you know, and just, you know, all of them from all over the country, you know. Yeah. So
that's what I'm having fun with too. I had one of those miracle moments with the American Beatles 45s. You know, I had one of those things you read about in books, you know, where I at a garage sale and literally found, you know, nothing but junk. And then you open the last box and, oh, look, it's Why. Oh, look, it's, you know, Ain't She Sweet. Oh, look, it's Can't Buy Me Love, you know, all in one box.
You go to those garage sales and it's like, you know, Mario Lanza's greatest hits, like times a thousand. You know, crap.
Pat Cooper, Whipped Cream and Other Delights.
Oh, you know, my God. Yeah. Like, where is the good stuff here? Right. Enough of this, you know.
You know, yeah, where are the Stones picture sleeves, you know, but yeah. So it was a Bonilla. Now I've gone back to that and I'm actually, you know, just buying stuff that's fun, you know, like sleeves that I'm falling in love with, like, wow, that looks great. I want that. Right. You know, now
are you doing the RAM Half Speed Master?
No, I haven't done the RAM Half Speed. That's probably another Desert Island record for me. So I may go back and do that. I haven't pulled the trigger on that yet, but that might be something that I would go back and do. Cause just that record's just,
It's gold.
Yeah, it really is.
We should have that this week, right? Partner, hopefully.
About a week after. Yeah. I mean, it's officially released on Friday. And McCartney.com seems to like to ship things on day of release.
So we'll get it like in June then.
Yeah. Well, yeah. As long as we don't have the McCartney 3 issues, we'll be okay.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever with that. Enough. Uncle.
Yeah, uncle, I know, right?
Ram Imagined, right? Isn't that kind of right? Isn't that thing? It's just going to be all just a whole bunch of like postcards of people holding the RAM. I don't know.
Right.
New artists holding the RAM.
Ridiculous.
But
let's talk Fab Four for a minute, Tony, because you guys just you know, you guys kind of like did a McCartney-centric episode here this last episode called "What Not So Silly Love Songs," which I love the title to that.
Thank you.
I wish I would have thought of that before you guys, but. That's your latest episode, right?
That's the latest episode. Yeah. We're just going on a little bit about Paul during the Jane Asher period, you know. Jane as Paul's muse,
right?
And, you know, what we think or don't think the influence was from Jane on Paul.
I mean, you definitely get more interesting lyrics during from Paul, you know. You know, I wouldn't mind if I knew what I wasn't, or I wouldn't mind if I knew what I wasn't missing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, that's kind of Lennon-esque in a way, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Writing songs for, you know, the woman who isn't the typical Liverpudlian, you know, clinging to her man. And, you know, this is a woman who's off leading her own life, doing her own career. And you know, how dare she not be right by this Liverpudlian guy, you know?
And love has a nasty habit of disappearing on another one, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and are these veiled, you know, were they veiled threats? Were they his insecurity? Was it, you know,
right?
So many different things. There's one, I forgot what it is now. I can't believe it, but one of the songs we sort of turn inside out a little bit, and we sort of take the love. So, well, it's the idea of, you know, here, there, and everywhere. You know, here he is, and we always look at that as like this sort of perfect little love song. But to lead a better life, I need my love to be here.
Right.
So there's some weird little subtlety going on there.
Yeah.
The woman who's not always there.
Right.
You know.
We seldom think of that song that way, but
yeah, you know,
it says it right there.
Yeah, it's putting a little twist on Jane to say, you know, it's the love song, but you know, changing my life with a wave of her hand. Well, it goes both ways. She waves her hand goodbye and she's gone, you know, and changing my, you know, so it's, it was fun. It was fun going through all those tracks and looking at them.
How many did you guys do?
We cover you know us. Once we get going, it just goes. So we take it from when his relationship with Jane started till when it ends.
Did you tackle for no one then?
No one.
Yeah. You did. Okay. You did.
Right. Yeah, that's, you know.
I figured that one had to be in there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a great moment lyrically for him, man.
Oh.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those little six, whatever it is, six stanzas or whatever it is, or wow, it's brilliant.
In a way, you think of those lyrics, you know, that those Jane, you know, songs or lyrics, and you compare them to some Linda lyrics, and I think those Jane lyrics are better than those Linda lyrics in a way. You know, I mean,
because those Jane lyrics are much more scornful. The Linda ones are much more homey and lovey because he's and comforting. Yeah. The Jane ones are a little more zinger in those lyrics.
Yeah. Yeah, for Linda, he would have
never
written a song that started with "For I Have Got Another Girl."
So in a way, that's kind of romanticism there of the 60s and what he went through, and ended up producing, you know, some of the best music ever written.
Right.
Wow. Because of that.
Good thing you didn't find Linda first.
Exactly. Well, that's a great topic, Tony. And I can't wait to listen to that when it drops. Cool.
So that you guys are on YouTube.
Yep.
You guys became a video cast starting last year, I believe it was.
Yeah, with the pandemic, we why not? Let people see what we look like. We're not that scary, I guess. But.
Right. Do we have faces for radio? I think most of us do, right?
Yeah. Indeed. So, YouTube, Spotify, all that fun stuff. So,
Well, Tony, we had a pleasure having you back on. We'll look forward to coming back on again, and always a pleasure, you know, talking with you.
Likewise, guys.
Yeah. Ditto. Andy, what's going on, and let's talk a little Two Legs here before we sign off.
Two Legs. Well, we've been on a little bit of a hiatus because, you know, Tom and I have lives outside of podcasting, so, you know, I hate to break the news to most of you people out there, but yeah. We took a little bit of a break from our ranking the tracks, but happy to report that those, as of this recording, that's now resumed again, and we'll have done Memory Almost Full, which will be our last, most recent one, and that's back on track again for weekly on Wednesday nights at 9 o'clock on our YouTube channel, which is just about at almost 580 some odd subscribers. So thank you for those, and we're going to keep our content growing on our YouTube channel as well. So thank you for that, everybody out there in YouTube land.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the video cast and to the podcast, which you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon, where we're just about anywhere you can find the audio podcast. We're there. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at twolegspodcast, Facebook, you know, we're always there. We're posting stuff there. You know, you can send us a message there as well. Please check out our YouTube channel, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We want to continue, for that channel to grow, and obviously Tony and the Fab Four guys are there as well, so please subscribe to their channel, because they're doing amazing episodes as well. And you guys have been, how long have you guys been doing the Fab Four show now?
Woo! Fab Four Free For All started in early 2012, so we'll be going on 10 years, and then we had the other show from 2009, so it's
been
a long time, but you guys are doing great stuff too. Yeah. So it's just
we all learn from somewhere, and that's
right.
Thank you.
You guys helped set the you know, the way of the world here, you know, how this podcasting, you know, you guys did all the experimenting and we learned what That's works true. And doesn't work from you guys.
Thank you. That's true, I guess. Yeah. We've been messing around with this for a long time.
Right. And yeah. We look forward to getting Mitch back on the show and finally getting Rob on the show as well, but you know, that might take a little bit more time. but anyways, for Tony, for Andy, I'm Tom, and everybody out there, as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care, everybody. See you soon.